Truth of Power about the Wet'suwet'en situation up north in northern British Columbia, Alberta paying to make BC the enemy of the people, and UBC's never coming around fall reading break. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. And rather than keeping this as a tokenistic gesture to the Indigenous peoples of Canada, as is generally done on UBC's Point Grey campus, we will keep the Indigenous struggle for self-determination and justice at the forefront of our consciousness. We will begin this show and every show until there is justice for Indigenous people, talking about colonialism. So the big colonial news that is too close to home and is turning into quite the debacle and a national embarrassment, if I do say so myself, of the inability to of a political party that legitimately ran on this whole nation to nation virtue signal concept of like, oh, we're going to treat Indigenous people properly, right? Like
that's basically reconciliation,
all the fun words, decolonization, whatever that means to these people. I mean, decolonization to me means we stop becoming a colony. So that would mean no more resource extraction and no more exploitation of people. But turns out what decolonization means is more of those things.
Right.
So that's where we're at. The saga, we talked about it last week, up in northern British Columbia near Houston, BC. I think that's the nearest town to the camp. So basically the coastal gas pipeline is running right through the middle of Wet'suwet'en territory. The Unist'ot'en people set up a roadblock to stop RCMP and the Coastal Gas Link crew from going in and doing surveying the land. And of course, they called in their private security force, the federal police, RCMP. So the RCMP show up to the scene. They are dressed head to toe in military gear. Looks like they're ready for combat. Looks like they're in Kandahar and not Canada.
Right.
And I think it's what the militarization of the police, you know, what that means to colonialism is that this is the new red scarlet coat RCMP people ripping the children away from the Indigenous mothers, the new RCMP people, you know, patrolling the new West in 1885 Canada, you know, making sure it's safe for more resource extraction. The barbaric practice of the settler colonial Canadian state continues to this very day, and they're using the exact same tactics, which is using the pigs, RCMP, to forcibly remove and displace Indigenous people from their lands. And that is wrong. It's against the UN Charter for Human Rights, UN Declaration of Human Rights, it is, and especially against the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People that was passed recently. And it's funny because all those treaties and promises that the Canadian state has made to the Wet'suwet'en state, so are hogwash to them. They don't give a shit. As soon as resource extraction is on the table, I guess we're, you know what? All the promises we make don't matter.
Right.
We gotta feed the cat. You know, we gotta make some money. Right. You'll start pushing paper here, boys. And to add insult to injury in this whole thing, actually, before I get to that, Ajit, do you have any thoughts about the what happened with the roadblock? Anything you want to touch on, militarization of police? Any of those subjects interest you?
Well, I mean, like you said, it's just kind of the next frontier for policing, I guess, is you know,
frontier, great word used to describe the virgin lands,
right,
ready to be raped by the settler colonists,
right? And like, just because maybe there's a lack of population there, it's not as developed as obviously, like, you know, the South Coast. They kind of justify, the police kind of justify this, like, you know, these people there, they don't live in the same kind of state of mind.
They're
as
making the same argument John Locke made in the Second Treatise of Government, that those savage natives aren't using the land right.
Right.
They're not properly exploiting it like we do in Europe, and which is why Europe is this beautiful, lush, you know, environmental playground where humans go, and they love to hang out in the forests and the mountains and the beautiful, you know, rivers and all that stuff of Europe. Oh, wait, no, it's a waste. Land.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally disgusting. The air is barely breathable.
Right.
Weird. Who are the real savages? Anyways, so unseated. That's a word that gets thrown around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I say it at the beginning of the show. I talk about the unseated territory. And so what does that mean, unseated? Unceded means it was never given up in a treaty. It was never traded away for anything.
Right.
It was never lost in a war. It has always been held by these people since time immemorial. The Canadian state has no claim over it.
Right.
No one does except for them. It is unceded. It is their territory.
Well, I mean, that's the manner we took it in, right?
Exactly, right? And there's like, oh, well, we didn't need that area where the Wet'suwet'en people lived when we were initially carving up Canada and sucking all the resources out of it and killing all the Indigenous people, but now we need it.
It's yeah, that's maybe one of the more interesting points is that we kind of delegate these different reservation areas or whatever.
Well, this isn't a reservation, so I'll discuss it quickly. So the difference between a reserve is that is the land allocated by the federal government through the Indian Act.
Right.
And that is where Indigenous people and their, you know, and the Band Council, which everybody loves, all the conservatives, Band Council. Well, if conservatives would stop being so racist to Indigenous people for 5 seconds right. and would realize what the Band Council really is that is the Indian Act's government. So the Canadian state has created a government for them to deal with,
right.
which is how they want things to be dealt with.
Right.
However, the Indigenous people probably don't like this bourgeois system of governance.
Oh, well, I mean,
maybe
that was the whole point of it, right?
They like the system of governance that has worked with relative ease since time immemorial,
right.
which is why they use the hereditary chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's a perfect version of government. I mean, I really like ours, where oil and gas companies and banks run the whole show. I feel safe at home,
right.
you know, knowing that, you know, those bankers out there know what's best for me, which is generally, you know, denying me basic human rights. But that's another topic for another day. So, you know, it's weird that the nation to nation thing comes up because there they are, the hereditary chiefs.
Right.
They say no. They're in charge of 99% of the land. The reserve people are in charge of 1% of the land. And Ajit, would it surprise you that the Band Council that everyone is citing, so the Band Council voted yes to the pipeline. That is why this is important. The Band
right.
Council of the Wet'suwet'en people voted yes.
Right.
They voted yes. Why? They got $13 million from Coastal GasLink.
All right, no doubt.
Weird. That's the price for a yes vote. However,
right.
these people live on the smallest part and so far away from the major pipeline route.
Mm-hmm.
So do they have really any say over that territory? No, it goes to the hereditary chiefs who all say no to the pipeline.
Right.
And for whatever reason, this apparently far too complicated thing was figured out by the seventh year student, history student at UBC, who has as crappy arts degree as all the skilled labor people will try to crap on me for. Yet, weird how I get that.
Right.
And then the RCMP still haven't figured it out. It's almost like they're there not to figure it out.
Right. And I mean, your point about the Band Council is a good one because like the Indigenous community in Canada is plagued by the same thing we're all plagued by, is that this extreme inequality, whereas those at the top, i.e. in this sense, they're Band Council members, benefit lavishly off of, you know, corporate gains.
Very well said.
And lobbying efforts, but never seems to filter down to the people who really need it.
Yeah, that trickle-down thing hasn't happened. We've been waiting for it since 1980.
I mean, wouldn't that be the most...
The 40th year of trickle-down economics is finally when it happens.
40th year, wow.
Yeah, 40 deep. Years of trickle-down, or as I like to say, trickle-up. It's more of like a reverse Robin Hood kind of thing. It's stealing from the poor to give to the rich.
Right.
It's pretty sick, but hey, that's the Republican Party for you, and the Democrats. So, I'm very glad you brought up the corruption of the Band Council. So, not to pass too many judgments on these people, obviously I wasn't there for all these, but neocolonialism, it's real. It's why Africa is such a mess today. It's not
right.
because like, oh, Spencer, Africans are just inherently unable to govern themselves. Look,
right.
the French have left, the Dutch have left. Why aren't they figuring it out? Well, maybe they're using the Dutch system and have just replaced the white people that were in there with black people.
Well, that was the lasting legacy, right?
And that's the thing. So it's not the people. It's not that, oh, if we just gave, you know, and that's the thing, right? It's not about, you know, oh my God, if this one ethnic group could just be in charge and everything would be okay. It's no. It's about a way of governing ourselves, which is why it's not, you know, we don't need an ethno state to finally get along. What we need is a structure
right.
that allows people's voices to be heard,
mm-hmm.
some kind of context that if we're faced by climate catastrophe and the people of the area say, hello, climate catastrophe, can we please not build the pipeline? We listen to the people.
Right.
That's all we're saying here. I'm not saying that, like, you know, because, like, let's be honest. Look, like, if Imperial Japan, was that good?
Right.
They're not white, but, oh, no. it's because they had an imperialist country like right. Canada, which is why we're all screwed up. Anyways, not to connect too many dots here. So the latest news we're getting out of APTN, Aboriginal People's National News, the Assembly of First Nations, the AFN, they intervened in the Wet'suwet'en and RCMP conflict amid negotiations. So this is reported by by APTN. The APTN reporter Justin Brake on January 15th. So basically what they're trying to get at is that they're trying to peacefully solve this issue. So as you know, other people might have seen in the time since we recorded and broadcast last week, the Wet'suwet'en people did not put their bodies on the line again after 14 were arrested by the militarized police. They did not put themselves on the line. They instead allowed them to survey the land and, you know, get ready to build the pipeline that the Wet'suwet'en people say will never be built.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. I get that strategy. I really do. I saw the video, Ajit, I don't know if you saw the video. It was basically army cops. So now we have combined the two worst things about our society, have merged them into one.
Right.
Militarized police. They were physically abusing women, men, people just standing in the way and trying to do anything about climate change, which
right.
obviously is against the law. If you try to stand up for civilization and making sure that we live another fucking 10 years, well, you're going to jail. That's right. basically what the cops are saying. And they conceded that ground, let them go through and survey everything. And now they're trying to work through things with the RCMP. APTN News has learned that on January 10th, as hereditary chiefs were brokering a deal with RCMP over the enforcement of a BC Supreme Court injunction granted to a private pipeline company against Indigenous land defenders, AFN National Chief Perry Belgrade called RCMP Commissioner Brenda Lucky to ensure the RCMP is operating in good faith and to remind the RCMP that they're there to serve and protect, not incarcerate. So that's a nice note, but unfortunately, as we know, they're there to serve and protect capital.
Right.
Ajit, any thoughts on the strategy of giving of conceding that ground and not putting themselves in harm's way of the police again after what happened last week?
I mean, you know, you push hard enough eventually. It's interesting, right? Like, I think on their end, they don't, like, they clearly want to stand up for what they believe in, but at the same time, they don't want to take it to the point where that there's some real harm inflicted. But I think, you know, maybe in a very unfortunate sense, that's what it really would take to wake people up to the reality of what's really going on here, is who the RCMP are serving. I mean, it always comes as some sort of broker deal.
It just gives that, like, bad taste.
Right. Well, it's kind of reflective of the general history of how we kind of screwed over Indigenous people, is that, you know, let's broker a deal. We're just going to do these subtle
Yeah, power
things,
dynamics. Right? I know you have an army and I know we're unarmed and right. I know that, you know, we live in the, you know, unfortunately, in like, you know, like they're unceded, they're ancestral territories, but like up in northern BC with very little like arms or, you know, infrastructure to fight back. So of course you can broker deal. It's like dealing with a child, you know,
right.
like we have like a full grown adult dealing with a child. Not that these people are childish per se, but it's just like, it's completely out of whack where you have right. like the entire nation state of Canada, the federal policing arm, which for whatever reason, people don't think of as the Gestapo. And I think that might've been one of the greatest, like, you know, pullovers on the Canadian people, which is that, oh yeah, no, the National Police Force. I know we're one of the few countries that has one
right.
and they're in all of your towns.
Oh,
but
they did a very good job of kind of, you know, giving this coddled image of the RCMP or whatnot. Like,
right?
Got this,
that was
you got those, you know,
psyops.
Those bear mascots and the RCMP
oh,
red suit.
These benign people, they're so good. Bullshit. Okay, so back to the article. On Monday, Chief Belgrade raised the issue with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and several cabinet ministers at a meeting in Ottawa. He told Trudeau the RCMP's actions were not respectful of our laws, of our people's rights, and that First Nations law was vetoed by Canada's domestic laws in the assumed crown sovereignty over our lands and territories. the people are glad that Bellegarde raised the matter with Trudeau, because the more people realize that we were the peacekeepers in this and that we were actually invaded, I think the public needs to know that. And I agree, because that's the one thing we get out of, you know, hopefully for this show, is just to you know, put it on blast that, like, yes, the RCMP is invading unceded territory. Yes, check that. Not part of Canada. Draw a circle right in the middle there. That's not our land. And you can't just run over a sovereign country. Like, who are we, the United States? Just invading Iraq, you know, we're treating everybody like they're,
I,
like they're
really
Iraq,
though, right?
Yeah, basically. Well, it comes to indigenous people, they might as well be Arabs, right? To,
right.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
To that's our mortal foe, you know, who right. We can't just stop imperializing enough.
Well, just on a social level, I noticed a lot of people side with the RCMP on this, and a lot of this sort of anger on these people who are siding with the RCMP comes from this kind of sense that, you know, indigenous people are overstepping their bounds by claiming that, you know, this territory, yes, which belonged to their ancestors, still belongs to them or whatnot. But what's the counter argument to that? The fact that a pipeline is getting built, suddenly the land's going to be prosperously shared by everyone, including
no.
Indigenous people. No, like,
ironically, not even shared to the people who are bootlicking on behalf of the RCMP,
right.
And like trying to shill for this pipeline. It's like, what do you?
Well, that's the point that we're really trying to make. Is that
even if you are one of these people, you are not going to see a freaking dime.
No,
they're going to raise taxes on us, no matter what
no
economic
matter what.
Productivity
right.
happens. Social spending is
going
to get cut.
Business cycle and a recession happens, you got to raise the taxes, right?
Of course. And then they got to bail out whatever big business falls. So and that's what I'm just trying to get to all the really reactionary white people out there that
oh,
get
it's
very
more than just
upset.
White people, tell you that too.
Just in general, sorry,
right.
Enlightened centrists, white people of all races,
reactionaries.
Just reactionaries right. in general. If you just have this like anti-indigenous view, you gotta understand that you're getting none of it either.
No.
So before you think that, oh, I'm siding with the powerful, that means the powerful are gonna like me. It's like, look at all the people that sided with the king in medieval times. How did they end up?
Right.
What happened to medieval society? Oh yeah, it crumbled. Because eventually this will crumble too. Because
right.
it's getting so disgusting to look at. Taking a long, hard look at the situation of seeing militarized police in 2019 invading lands that don't belong to them and never have and never will.
Right.
And just like abusing people, physically removing them, displacing indigenous people yet again, even after all the reconciliation stuff, even after all the UN treaties.
Well, it's just generally
symbolic. If this doesn't like, you know, wake you up to the fact that all that shit is garbage. It's garbage. It's not worth what the paper is written on. It's a PR stunt. You're living in a spectacle. I think they call this simulacra, where we're living in a fake world. Because unfortunately, in a lot of people's minds, they do live in fake worlds where these
right.
rules matter to somebody.
Right.
They don't. This is it. Like when the rubber hits the road, push comes to shove, at the end of the day, big business wins.
Right.
Indigenous people lose. The law is now not followed because the rule of law isn't real. I'm
no,
sorry.
It's
power.
It's a transitory thing, kind of.
It's power dynamics. And guess what? Who holds all the cards? Maybe the Federal Police Department.
Right.
Weird. The Pigs had a press conference in Surrey. RCMP assistant to the commissioner, Eric Stubbs, said the RCMP would conduct a standard review of their operation, which, surprisingly, they found everything was perfect, which will include reviewing video footage of the arrests. But as of Monday, they have not identified any issues regarding police officer conduct. Of course, because when you're a lapdog to power, you don't ever have to look at yourself in the mirror.
Well,
so.
This review process is just a...
Review
PR stunt, facade, whatever you want to call
it. I'm just saying, like, this is, I'm not trying to be like, oh, you don't, fake news world, info wars. It's just that, like, you know, when we look at the real world, which is this, more or less, this situation, the real world gets very scary and sad. And because that's what it really is. When
right.
you take off the nice, shiny Justin Trudeau veneer and the really, like, really uppity middle class attitude of that everything's good and we're really working with these people, it's all bullshit. They're
right.
not. They're just going to take. Because that's all they know how to do is to take, and then take more. And just once again, we are looking at climate catastrophe happening. Not just climate change, because that's gone. That happened. We should have done something about that in like the 80s and 90s. That's gone. So now we're just dealing with how do we not deal with an absolute catastrophe where the BC forest fires run rampant and just, you know, wipe out our entire province.
Right.
Do you think Coastal GasLink, you know, pipeline is going to help with this?
Of course not.
And, you know, and Chomsky said it best last week, you know, it's a complete inversion where the people who have all the privileges, all the power, all the decision-making ability choose to destroy us, choose to send us into climate catastrophe. And all the people who have had nothing, have had everything, not only had nothing, they used to have everything, then it was taken from them. Mm-hmm. And now what's left of them are fighting for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't, my heart is warmed every time I think about all the people who are out there defending our planet from being destroyed by big energy and big oil, big gas, that they're out there helping and actually doing something. And I wish that we were all out there helping them too. But unfortunately, we all have our parts to play. You got to make the most of it because, you know, it can't just be them.
Right.
It's got to be everybody. And I think there's an action on campus at noon tomorrow by Sauter School of Business. Check it out. Hopefully there'll be a fun teach-in vibe and there'll be lots to be learned out there. So check that out. Sauter School of Business, noon tomorrow. We got to take a short break for commercials, but we'll be right back. Do not change that dial.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
But by leaving out the most important things you need to know, they can elevate awareness to a new all-time low.
I own my media.
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 The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members.
But if it's just left out, can you say the paper lied? A lot of things that happened didn't happen after all. If there's no one in the forest who will put it in the news, I guess the tree didn't fall.
Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
I'm joining today. You should too.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. I'm with my co-host, Jeet.
What's up?
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and we're going to be discussing how Alberta has spent $23 million calling BC an enemy of Canada. This is a report by Brian Carney, posted today on the Tyee.ca, great website, check it out. This is from a Tyee Freedom of Information request that reveals a pro-pipeline PR strategy and spiraling costs. So, Ajit, just any thoughts off the dome just from that headline. Obviously, we're going to read the article, just from a headline, the province of Alberta spending $23 million for a pro-pipeline PR strategy calling BC an enemy of Canada.
It's interesting. I didn't know there was a marketing budget allocated from the taxes. Or where's this money coming from, I wonder?
Oh, I think we're going to get into that soon. And Ajit, what is it when government and the corporations are in lockstep? What kind of regime is that you generally thought of in history?
It's an F word, isn't it? Yeah, that, we call that fascism.
Yeah, that is... basically it. I mean, your government is your corporation. Your corporation is your government. That's quite dystopian. Welcome to 1984, everybody.
Right.
So this is from the article. The Alberta government has spent more than $23 million, twice as much as previously revealed, in a campaign designed to turn the rest of Canada against BC, the Tyee has learned. The Keep Canada Working ad and PR campaign's top principal states, quote, this is not BC versus Alberta. This is BC versus Canada.
Oh, that's their trademark motto.
According to documents obtained under a Freedom of Information request. The documents show how an ethnic campaign targeted residents of the Lower Mainland, Toronto suburbs, and Ottawa who speak Spanish, Mandarin, Cantonese, Filipino, and Punjabi.
Mm.
Looking at you, Ajit.
Right.
Work first began in January 2018 to create the campaign that promotes expanding the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline, which would triple the volume of Alberta bitumen sent through the port of Vancouver. As recently as November 14th, 2018, Rachel Notley's NDP government stated it has spent $10 million on the campaign. On January 7th, 2019, the Alberta government told the Tyee the amount had reached $23 million.
Wow.
So, Ajit, a couple things there. You are an ethnic, as the documents describe the Alberta government, an ethnic campaign. Okay, so what is that? Are whites not ethnic? Okay, I see you, Alberta. As an ethnic campaign, this was directed directly at you, Ajit.
Right.
Me, I'm not an ethnic. Clearly, I'm kidding. Well, maybe by Alberta standards, I'm an ethnic.
Yeah, probably.
Keep Canada Working ad. Have you seen those? I've seen tons of these ads on TV and on YouTube.
I think on YouTube, yeah.
Where they're explaining how good pipelines are for the environment.
Something like that.
Some real up is down, down is up shit. Like some real like magical thinking.
Or, you know, get the money.
Right? Yeah. That's pump the oil. Pump the money. You know, we should come up with a better slogan.
Right.
And $23 million. So this is what kind of blows my mind. So conservatives, especially Albertans, basically, you know, they scream for separation from Canada. They scream about, oh, my God, how can you take in refugees? Look at all the homeless. How can you spend $23 million on ads on people, on ethnics, and you won't even spend any money on the poor whites that you guys claim to care about, and you virtue province. Signal in your Facebook right. comments? What's up with that?
Right. Well, it's very interesting, the fact that, and I think this goes to the earlier point about how a lot of the reactionaries, no, they're not just white, they're of all races, and I think this is the type of...
whatever race you can buy shares in an oil company, whatever gender, race, sexuality that allows that to happen, turns out they can... flip like that, like a snap of the fingers, they're boom back on Team Pipeline.
Right. It's kind of funny though, because for a lot of these immigrants, obviously that's who they're really targeting, because obviously people like me, first generation Canadians, you know, we can sift through the bullshit, at least I hope we can, right, just because of better English comprehension or whatnot. But you know, for a lot of these, this ethnic campaign, you know, just the fact that you're here,
their words, not ours, they call it an ethnic
right,
campaign.
That right there should raise some flags.
I was like, wait, what?
Right, and I think there's I have not seen it in, you know, whatever language. I have not seen those ads specifically, but I bet there's a lot lost in translation, you know, in whatever they're focusing on saying.
I didn't even think about that. Right. Like, think about the linguistic licensing you could get if you're like, oh, I was just translating. I didn't mean to say that climate change isn't real. Right. It was Google Translate. Wow. That's just great plausible deniability.
Oh, I bet the major focus, and these people aren't stupid, right? They know what do immigrants care about, right?
The bottom line.
Good future for their kids.
Well, it's because they're so economically depraved by the establishment, the non-immigrant community.
Truest form of workers.
Right? Like the people, well, they're like the super exploited. They're exploited by the exploited. They're they're the people who are hired by those, like, you know, barely making it by contractors, you know, like they're like the most abused labor. Can't, like, because they can't even, they
well, I mean, speaking from experience, they fully bought into the capitalist system and they don't even bend an inch, because they're just programmed, you know, through this whole process just to be grateful. And it's good on them for having such a strong will, but at the same time, it's really bad that the fact that, you know, they're not even allowed to have this kind of you know, this mental flexibility. They're so bought into the idea that, okay, I got to go to work to afford my house and pay my kids' education.
Well, because they're dealing with the reality of the what's put in front of them. Like, it's not like they have a choice, right? Like, because once you have a little bit of privilege, then you get a choice.
Right.
These people are denied a privilege. They don't get a choice.
Right.
And it's like, you know, like my heart goes out to them, because they're the ones that are like, you know, put in the toughest. They don't get to be like, well, I would like to shop at Whole Foods instead of Walmart because, you know, I care. But these are the people who don't have a choice. They're stuck. Right. And it's sad that Alberta, like, I mean, and that's the thing, right? Like, it's not just Ajit and I who know this, right? You know, we're unfortunately, I don't know how to tell our listeners this, but I'm not the smartest person ever. And this might come as a surprise to everybody out there. I'm not actually the smartest person to have ever lived. That there's way smarter people in this NDP government, and way smarter people that are in charge of this PR scam, because they know what I know, which is that, you know, immigrant people are so exploited that they'll go along with most things if you put it to them in a way that makes sense to them.
Right.
And that's why they target them. So it's like, it's not that I'm the one projecting this onto them.
No.
This is the calculation they're doing. Why do you think they didn't target white, middle class liberals?
Well, that's the whole thing. Their prime enemy are those, you know, white people on Vancouver Island.
Like, yeah, right. What are they going to do? Are they targeting? You know, are there no ethnics in Vancouver Island? Oh, wait, that's where everyone's resisting this, you know, politically, and that's where there's enough money in it to stop it. Mm-hmm. Huh? Right. Weird. It's like they're playing chess, right?
Right.
And that's why I try to just I'd like to elucidate for everybody and just really illuminate how terrible all this is, because it takes two guys in our, you know, on our campus radio show to pick these people apart, but they're as slick as they are, they're not that slick.
No,
but they're slick enough to know what they're doing, and that's what I'm trying to tell you. There's no one stupid here.
Yeah,
they know what they're doing. They choose to do it, and they'll take their measly paychecks, and they'll put out this like BS.
Move along.
It's horrible. So the province's self. This is back to the article. The province's self-described full-service public relations arm, the Communications and Public Engagement Department, named that figure in an email responding to Freedom of Information request filed by the Tyee. In the past 2 months, Alberta has dumped more than $13 million.
Yeah,
$6.5 million a month.
Wow!
We could have.
Couldn't those?
I know many businesses.
Are there a lot of out of work energy sector people? Like,
oh, maybe there's some. You know, aren't there the homeless veterans that you guys love to, you know, virtue signal about all the time? And then now it's a, you're dumping in this silly ad campaign targeted at.
You got to do what matters.
Okay? At reactionaries' favorite people to hate, ethnics. Weird. You know, it's almost that like when you have a completely, you know, a province that has fallen under a complete cognitive dissonance and really right. and is starting to drink the Kool-Aid
right.
and really believe the lies. Like, this is the kind of the contradictions and just straight up like just two countervailing points that you shouldn't be able to hold in your head at the same time, but like that's basically the politics of this entire province. Shouts out to people from Alberta. I feel your pain. This must be really, really hard.
Right.
The dying here's the question that we're all thinking. I know Ajit is. What did the $23 million in taxpayer money buy? Internal Alberta government documents obtained by the Tyee reveal the top principal of the so-called Keep Canada Working campaign. This is not BC versus Alberta. This is BC versus Canada. Having pegged their effort on driving a wedge between one province and the rest of the country, right. the CPE team lists two more principles. It's senseless to pit the environment against the economy, and this is a good thing. The campaign's objectives are to strengthen and equip advocate base and persuade the less engaged, and also frame the national conversation. This is how propaganda works, people. Right. This is it. Like we were just alluding to, they know who they're talking to. They know that they can get these people because they have not been exposed to this.
Mm-hmm.
This the whole climate change, you know, debate. They haven't been. They don't know how big of a scam energy is. They don't know how big of a scam the whole capitalist system is.
Right.
So they're picking on the people that are too busy, you know, barely trying to make it by. And of course, they don't know any better. And that's who they're targeting. They're not going after educated people.
No.
Because educated people already shill for the government. They need to advertise to them. But they need to trick the proletarians. You know, right. just people who are really just grinding right. to vote for them.
Small business people and whatnot.
Well, the small business people have already flipped and they're like, yeah. Cut taxes and, you know, jam the pipeline, you know, because like they'll make, you know, something out of it.
Right.
Eventually. So they're just like, whatever. You know, for my G, I can save in taxes. It's worth plunging the world into climate crisis. It's weird. Don't get me started about small business people. Yeah. Hot take. Hate small business. Every politician loves small business. As a politician, I hate small business. Mm. I'm kidding.
Weirdly, politicians probably do too.
Yeah, probably deep down they do. Okay, so we just touched on persuading the less engaged, basically further exploitation of exploited people,
right.
to strengthen and equip advocate base, aka what does that mean? That means to give talking points to their horrible right-wing trolls that spend all day on social media talking smack in Facebook conversations, Twitter threads, and the like. So this is what they're spending money on. So they spent $23 million to exploit people who don't know any better. They spent $23 million to make up right-wing talking points so that they can get a pipeline built and, like, you know, basically, you know, I don't know, sign the death notice of, you know, the entire planet, you know, right. while we plunge into climate crisis, and then also frame the national conversation. So they're setting the table, so to speak. They're the ones who get to choose what is being discussed. And I think that's terrible. And it's really interesting how the intergovernmental, you know, the NDP government, and ironically an NDP government of all people, this is the center left.
Well, it's
terrible,
revealing,
yeah. terrible, just so you know, center left politics, horrible. You know what's really great politics? Left politics,
right.
You know, forget the center, leave them
whatever that is,
yeah, leave them out to dry. it is senseless to pit the environment against the economy. I think that really, that's a really beautiful line. Ajit, any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, I just wholeheartedly agree. And it's just downright pathetic.
It's senseless to pit the environment. You know what? I agree. The environment always wins. Because without the environment, there is no economy, Alberta.
Right. Well, I mean, times are changing. This is like they're just hanging on to the last vestiges of
I have, of what they have one left. One request. I want everybody, this is, you know, for all my UBC history people out there, I want the entire province of Alberta to take History 106, environmental history, and they can learn the lessons of people past who have tried to, and in their, you know, hubris, you know, oh, there goes my Greek again. I'm so smart. When they find out that people are not God, and you can't ultimately, you know, human activity cannot override what the environment is doing. We are subject to it.
Right.
You know, we make an effect on it. You know, we make an effect on the environment. And the environment inputs us back.
Right.
And however it changes, we might not be involved in that, the next equation, so to speak. Right.
And we have proof that this
there's
is going on.
Tons of civilizations that have collapsed due to this stuff.
Right.
And like, just the fact that people think like, oh, it can't happen to us. It's a global. Yeah. Then it'll be global right. collapse.
I mean, it's already happening. So,
yeah. So anyways, climate change real. Check out more climate change on the Spencer Latu show. Right. We're going to move along just because we have some UBC news, and this is always fun to talk UBC. What a great institution we have here. So, the UBC wrote this. This is the school paper. This article is written by Sarah Zhao on January 9th. Fall Reading Week. Ajit, how long have you been at UBC, and when did you first hear about Fall Reading Week?
Well, it's my fifth year, and it's been, you know, an ongoing issue since first year.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So why do you want a fall reading break?
Well, I mean, you know, school is just the baseline for students, right? It's not like only thing we do is school. We got school and then the rest of life. So mm-hmm. work, relationships, you know.
Wow. You're very, wow. Some avocado toast in there too?
Probably.
Jeez, would you like to spend $1,000 a month on Skip the Dishes, according to CBC who posted today?
I mean,
jeez, Ajit. Can you believe this millennial, guys? Please call in and tell me how much of a millennial Ajit
well,
is.
Well, to make my labor attractive, I have to eat avocado to stay healthy and, you know, look attractive.
And
basically, right?
Yeah, and hopefully, and hopefully the capitalists will bestow upon you wages. That would
yes.
be nice. That would be cool.
Yes.
So basically, you know, I've had a very similar experience to you, Ajit. This has been a long time coming. You know, I've really, really wanted this fall reading break, you know, in the middle of October. And in the middle of October, I'm usually, you know what? Fuck school. You know what? I just want to party. I want to have fun on Halloween. Actually, no,
parties.
I would say it's more like mid-November. You're just like, God, I need a break.
Right,
your
right.
soul, like after Halloween is basically when school becomes really not fun, in my opinion. And my heart is like kind of like, ugh, I just don't want to
like,
do this
F
anymore.
Me.
I know, right? And it's just like, I'm just thinking like, why do I even do this to myself? I've got like 6 papers due in the next month and then like 80 finals.
Right, second midterm.
Haven't like, done the readings. I don't even know where my class is because I haven't gone yet.
Gotta go to work.
You know, yeah, right. So we're mixing in some like BS arguments and some true ones, right? So when you're very busy, very tired, and you just need a week off to, God forbid, catch up on readings. Did you have to catch up on readings at any point this fall term?
I am always living in a state of perpetual catching up on readings. Let's put it that way.
Do you think a reading break where you could hypothetically catch up on that amongst other things would prove useful to your studies?
I bet it would.
Oh, that would be fantastic. So before we get to why UBC still doesn't have a fall reading break, the answer may shock you. Just stick around after these commercials. We'll be right back.
Hey there. My name is Callum Ng, the executive director of BC Athlete Voice. We're an athlete-focused organization helping British Columbia's athletes become their best. How do we do that? Well, if you're a BC athlete, we can help you with pretty much everything related to leadership, advocacy, and education. For example, we can help you find funding, start a new athlete group, or develop better public speaking skills. It's all at bcathletevoice.ca. And don't forget to look for us on Twitter and Facebook by searching BC Athlete Voice. Check it out.
Yeah. Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Unceded Musqueam Territory. I'm with my co-host Ajit.
What's up?
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and we have cracked the code, people. Why UB? This is a headline written by Sarah Zhao in the UBC, written January 9th, 2019. Why UBC still doesn't have a fall reading break, comma, what comes after the comma? In numbers.
Oh.
It's
statistical evidence.
Weird. So UBC still doesn't fall reading break due to numbers.
Well, numbers, you know, connotates there's going to be some statistical hard evidence.
Oh, there's going to be some the hardest of data.
Right.
There's going to be some smackdown. Oh, you guys don't know numbers. You just know political theory. Well, I don't know what to tell you, because if you spend all your time learning about, you know, class struggle and, you know, mental health and how students' well-being and a bureaucracy that has become completely irresponsible, unresponsive.
Just shut up and take calculus.
Yeah. You don't take math? Okay, well, you'll know. You can't possibly read this 2-minute article by the UBC. It's numbers based. Okay, there's a picture of a percent sign, and there's people hanging off of it. So I mean, you got to be real, real, real smart to read this kind of stuff. Anyways, so every year students call on UBC for a fall reading break, and every year we don't get one.
I wonder why.
To break down why a break doesn't exist despite years of lobbying, the UBC dug into the factors and figures that make implementing a break so complicated. Wow, this is so hard for people to understand. That make, I don't know, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars a year?
A couple hundred.
I mean, if you read the salaries of these people, it's shocking. The amount of money that these cretins, you know, suck up every day out of the pockets of students, and honestly, the taxpayers as well. So we're all in this together, people of British Columbia. This isn't just, you know, us that are complaining. Your money goes to pay these people's salaries. Oh, exorbitant. Well,
it's a public institution, right?
Yeah, VP of, you know, screwing over students gets paid $250K. The UBC still doesn't have fall reading break, so we'll get back to this. We looked at data from some of Canada's largest schools from coast to coast across the country and asked whether or not they have fall reading breaks, how long those breaks are, and how many instructional days each school has. The biggest problem? What do you think the biggest problem is, Ajit?
I think the numbers tell too few teaching days.
Yeah. Oh, teaching days. Specifically, there aren't enough of them. UBC has the second lowest number of instructional days of any major Canadian university, said Senate Academic Policy Chair Dr. Paul Harrison. As a result, it's difficult to find space for an additional break.
Let's analyze what incentive does the UBC board have for keeping teaching days to a minimal? Oh, you know, business 101, you got less costs associated with less instructional days.
So it's weird that they're depriving this of us. It almost seems like, you know, it's a different kind of logic. It's not like they're just crunching the numbers and have decided that, we're just trying to make a buck and we're just doing what's best for them and the market and blah, blah. It's we've entered a whole new, you know, hyperspace of upside down, down is up,
right?
Magical thinking here, Ajit.
The alternative to have a fall reading break, we would need to start a week earlier. So it would be a shifting of costs in their mind. But, you know, I'm sure there would be some...
But Ajit, the status quo, it's just so nice.
Right, right.
It's so nice.
Oh, because, yeah, everybody loves going... traveling out of province just for 3 days on
and
Thanksgiving.
And Ajit, this author really did a good job of setting the stakes. Every year, students call on UBC for fall reading break, and every year we don't get one. That's it. It's just students calling on it. It's not like anything important, right?
Right. Just the people who literally make this business complainers, guys.
Just ignore them. Ignore them. And I would just like to go back to this. So it's difficult for space to find an additional reading break, and this is like why I'm just, you know, I've gone on the deep end on media criticism and just the language that people use to do these things. It's difficult.
Right.
How is that like reason to ignore something that's been asked for at least in your time and my time too, for over 5 years, probably right. even longer. Let's be honest here. Probably like decades, probably.
Since time immemorial.
Legit. Since time immemorial, students have wanted fall reading break. Right. That'd be quite the tagline to start it. and then here's something very fascinating by our AMS VP Academic and University Affairs, Max Holmes. We haven't really heard a push from students to lower the amount of instructional days. Really? Because I'm pretty sure. Actually, wait.
Are you deaf?
Max, weird that you say that, because I just did a quick Google search of fall reading week and I found, there's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 articles that's a Reddit link. 9 UBC articles. So let's start reading the headlines, okay? Editorial, November 16th, 2016. UBC owes students a fall reading week. Editorial, October 24th, 2017. Where are we with our fall reading week? November 9th, 2016. Why UBC still won't have a fall reading break next year? From just, let's see, just this past year, we have AMS host town hall. Here's feedback on fall reading break. Did you not hear anything there? Did no one show up to the town hall? Is this maybe part of the problem that we're dealing with the AMS currently, where the AMS did not even advertise and it explicitly said it did not want students coming to its annual general meeting? Weird. Sounds like we have a crisis of democracy where you can't even understand what students want, which I could ask literally anyone outside this studio and ask them, do you want a fall reading break? Guaranteed most people say yes. They're right. Probably going to say yes. Everyone wants a reading week. Like, it's everyone else has one. I don't see why we can't have one too. Moving along, so just some journalism 101. So it's important to set the stakes, right? You know, why am I writing this article? You know, why are we talking about fall reading week? You know, we heard from the author, the students call on UBC for a fall reading break and they didn't get one. And then even though why it didn't happen, despite the years of lobbying, it's basically just the numbers and there's facts and figures. And that's why we can't have nice things. There's no power struggle. There's no class struggle. There's no power dynamics. There's no
other universities managed to pull this off.
Yeah, well, they don't exist. Okay, right. We're looking at these numbers, Ajit. Right. Don't bring up those numbers. Okay, it's in numbers, not your numbers.
So let's get this straight. 3 out of 50 at least universities are the only ones not doing this. I wonder why.
Oh, weird. So University of Toronto, University of Laval, University of Winnipeg, University of Alberta, University of Saskatchewan, University. King's College, Dalhousie, Acadia, Waterloo, and Queens. Hell, even York got one. So, and this is the most infuriating about the whole thing. So we made a lot of jokes, and obviously this is one of the things I prefer to laugh at than cry, because it is hard. It's hard going every single year. Oh, fall reading break. Every single AMS politician runs on fall reading break. Everybody wants fall reading break. Clearly, right. Who doesn't want fall reading break?
Right, right.
It's basically like saying, who doesn't want free stuff? Everybody wants it. We get it.
Just a mental break.
It's hard. It's hard to go year to year. Because now I just feel like a dupe. I voted every single year in AMS elections, and I voted for a fall reading week every single year, and I haven't gotten it.
That's democracy in action.
Yeah, democracy dies in darkness, people. Washington Post. So here are the stakes, at least in my mind, because like, although I'm one of those people who's lucky and I kind of, you know, I'm very jovial. I get to laugh it off, so to speak. And like the middle of the term crunch is hard. It's hard for everybody, but it's not particularly that hard for me. Right. It's not that bad. I've done school for a very long time. And if ever it gets too stressful, I just don't try.
Right.
I'll be honest. That's my coping mechanism. I'm just like, eh.
I wonder, are you alone in that? No.
No. There's some people out there, right, that are, you know, they're lucky and then they don't do this. But here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the people suffering in silence. I want to talk about the people who are in the middle of their term, you know, term one and first year's hard, and they want to see their families. They're a little bit homesick.
Right.
You know,
a lot of internationals.
Tons of international students, which, you know, that will be another topic for another day. There's people from all out of town, not necessarily from Vancouver. No. You know, and they want to go, you know, it's just like
me. Maybe and you. Right? We're not from Vancouver proper.
You want to go back home and you need time, and maybe a weekend's not enough time.
Right.
Right? You know, maybe you have class Friday, you got a project due, you don't really have time to go sit around. You know, a reading week would be
maybe
nice.
You don't even want to go home. Right? You just want to fuck off from class.
Yeah, and God forbid you just want to break from everything.
Right.
And then from those, the, you know, pretty benign issues, right? You're a little bit homesick, but they develop into worse things. So the problem with school is that it sometimes becomes such a crushing burden with constant stuff to do all the time, and that, you know, students' brains is, you know, their mental health can't take it anymore.
No. Well, their physical health either. Well, which is directly
exactly.
related.
Exactly. Their health in general. Yes. Yeah. So it's mental health and physical health, because you can't go to the gym. It's too busy. You're eating terribly
to cope
with your feelings.
Right.
It's just, it's a horrible situation.
And let's not even begin with the drug abuse.
Oh, yes.
Like,
oh, my God.
Adderall people.
Drinking.
Like Xanax. Yeah. Like, I think antidepressants are probably the most popular drugs on campus, I bet.
And from that, we have a mental health crisis. And all I'm saying is that, I'm not going to say this. This is from the AMS mental health people. They noted that they get the spike in people who come to them with mental health concerns near October, November. Ironically enough,
I wonder why.
Where would the fall reading week fall into that?
Sometime then.
maybe. And what really frustrated me with this article, and why I wanted to bring it into the show today, was that the stakes were set in the last paragraph by this author. And this is the thing. We need more, you know, I'd like to think that at the Spencer Lachey Show, we love political theory. We love big brain stuff. We love, you know, nerding out over these silly, you know, economic concepts and whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, the reason why we're drawn to left politics, and I'm sure, you know, I'm allowed to speak on you for this one, is that we care. We genuinely do care.
Right.
I just don't want to see people die needlessly. Crazy
or
politics.
Suffer.
Oh, yeah. Suffering needlessly, Spencer. Oh, you dreamer, fairy duster, unicorn, Bernie bro. How dare you think that? Okay, right. Fair enough. If that's how you feel about me, whatever. I'll own it.
Right.
I will gladly own that fairy duster dream of people not suffering needlessly. The final article, the final paragraph is, across Canada, universities are finding ways to give their students a break, big or small, in the fall term. UBC is looking more and more like an outlier, even as students push for a relief from the stress and mental health concerns of one long term. That is a really beautifully written paragraph, probably the best written paragraph of this whole essay, thing that we read out to all of you, this whole article. Ajit, what do you feel about that? Do you think that kind of hit the nail on the head?
Yeah, I mean, that gets to the point, right?
Like, we're an outlier.
Right.
Students push for a relief from stress and mental health concerns, and it's a long term.
Right. And again, this is...
Universities are finding ways to give their students a break, big or small.
No, we're in the minority. Let's understand that.
Yeah.
We are out of the many dozens. And, you know, everybody here knows UBC sets very high academic standards. And, you know, people strive. You know, people really struggle. And, you know, I feel for the people in all faculties, you know. And it was interesting, you know, some engineers made the argument that, you know, for their professional designation that they need a certain amount of teaching days. You know, this doesn't eliminate that. This just shifts it a bit earlier. And people, believe it or not, are glad to come back to September is like one of the happiest times of the year, because you
Weird.
Come back after, you know, having
the forest fires.
Right, exactly. Right, you're back here choking on smoke, that's why. But people, I bet,
sorry to be glib about it,
nobody would mind starting a week earlier
in this beautiful Vancouver weather.
Right. And those people who did, and, like, you know, sorry to break it to you, but first week is pretty much like a, how do you say it, like,
well,
a
there's actually
off.
A party. It's called AMS first week,
right?
So, like, that's just so you know, that's how AMS feels about it. I digress.
Right, first week's a joke anyway.
And Ajit, just to, you know, I want to show some love to the writer, and I appreciate all journalists out there, and I'm sorry that if I this came off harsh, like I'm ripping you
well,
a new one.
Part of being a journalist is being critiqued,
right? We know that democracy dies in darkness, and we just want to bring light to maybe some, you know, framing of an issue that wasn't people-centered. Maybe the fact that this was kind of written as stenography to power, and maybe that's why I'm pushing back. That's all. I have nothing personal, and in fact, I do think that this writer is a good writer, because that final paragraph was bang on. He hit it on the head. Everywhere else is trying to find their students a break. Fall term is long, and it sucks. UBC is an outlier, and students push for relief from the stress and mental health concerns. So I'd like to, you know, students push, right? But Absolutely. But Max Holmes, who's actually in charge of the AMS VP Academic and University Affairs Office, doesn't think so. You know, he said, we haven't really heard a push from students. So what is it? What is it? You know, which one is it?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to push? Or are they not pushing?
Right.
Because you just said at the end of the article, people are pushing. I know for a fact people are pushing. Everybody's pushing. Because everybody gets elected to AMS on that stupid idea that we can get a fall reading break.
Right.
It's the most popular thing. So it's weird that, like, you know, and as silly as student politics
is,
that
it's our version of cutting taxes, right?
It's just, it's the Santa Claus, right? You know, it's like, let me give you something. You know, you vote for me, you get something, right?
Right.
And I get that. But at what point are we going to say that, like, this is all just, you know, bureaucratic interference being sent out by the ruling middle management class of UBC?
Mm.
You know, we're hearing it from the Those from the guys. Horse's mouth, right? We have the second lowest number of instructional days. Like, okay, and it's difficult to find space for an additional break, but not impossible. So, and then Harrison, this is the biggest bullshit in this whole article. Can you believe this guy? Senate Academic Policy Chair, Dr. Paul Harrison. I will figure out how much he makes, and I will report that on the show next week. But this is what he says. He says that he's consulted with students that they don't want their class time to be lowered. Weird, Dr. Harrison, because right. Sarah, the writer of this, says that students push for a relief from stress and mental health concerns. So and then Max is over here echoing what the establishment of, you know, the middle management class and this weird, you know, bureaucratic slash academic intelligentsia group of people say, that they don't want class time to be lowered.
Right.
So are you just gaslighting us? You know, is the Senate Academic Policy Chair just gaslighting people, lying to their fucking face?
Right.
Saying that, "Oh, we don't want it to be lowered. Students, you don't want it to be lowered. You're crazy. You don't think like that."
Right.
And then the UBC obviously prints that uncritically. You know, I'd love to ask the editors, you know, how did this get across? You know, you've taken down the article I wanted to read, which was the, you know, savage opinion letter takedown of this really stupid idea.
Right.
And that's gone off the website. This is still up, though. Thank God we can talk about it on the show a week later.
Right.
That this dumpster fire is
might have
here.
An update on that salary for Mr. Harrison.
Do you?
If this is the right one, I assume it is. It's from 2014-15 fiscal year, 183,000.
183 grand. Weird.
I think he's doing fine.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. It's difficult. It's difficult, Ajit. That's why you just don't get, Ajit. You and all your lefty friends, especially right. Spencer, you guys just don't get how difficult it is, okay? I'm a busy guy. I sit behind a desk all day. I come to UBC. I act like I'm better than everybody else. I treat students like shit, you know? And it's difficult to find space for an additional break, okay?
Right.
Get off my back.
Get off my back.
I can't figure it out. I have 183 grand. I don't know how to use a calendar. I can't even read a clock. Can't do long division. And it's difficult to find space for an additional break. It's insane. This is just stuff like this that kind of blows my mind. That you're allowed to be a powerful person and be taken seriously. Like, this would be different if it was coming out of Donald Trump's mouth. Because it's like, okay, this guy's full of shit.
Right.
Well, or any Republican.
This is not the paradox of our society, though.
Right. But it's happening at our campus, though. We have people who are gaslighting people. Students gaslighting students.
Well, it happens.
Max Holmes, we know that there's been a push. Shut up. You ran on that. That was your platform. Shut up.
Oh, I'm sure.
Shut up. It's just crazy. Gaslighting. What is gaslighting? It's when you tell somebody that what they're seeing in front of their face isn't real.
Right.
It's lying.
Right.
It's when Nancy Pelosi says Medicare for All is not as good as the Affordable Health Care Act. Affordable Care Act, I mean.
Right.
That's gaslighting. It's just not true. And everybody knows it.
Well,
it's crazy. Any thoughts on this, Ajit?
I think UBC should change their motto to something like, yeah, we'll lie to your face.
You are UBC.
Right.
You are UBC's profits.
Right.
And what's crazy...
We own you is what they're really saying.
And yeah, and we appreciate... Yeah, we own you, UBC. Death Star. You know, anyways. But it's crazy how Kyle comes in here, you know, and we love Kyle to death. And he's uncovered this, you know, nugget of golden truth here where that this school is taking in $221 million of tuition fees annually.
Right.
And you can't figure out where to get a freaking fall reading break. And you pretend that everything is, you know, totally like that there's nothing wrong, that the UBC can't even get in on that scoop themselves.
Right.
And they're trying to feed us this bullshit. It's like, come on, guys.
Nobody's starving here. The institution.
The jig is up. Yeah. Right. The only people starving here are actually students, which, you know, thankfully the UBC did report on that, the starving students.
Right.
I just wish they would get to the root cause of the starvation, which is the fact that we have people in this institution who don't care about anyone. They're borderline sociopaths that will lie to your face. They have no problem lying to you. No problem putting how many people more mental health problems do we need to have
right.
before you take this seriously?
Right.
What's the body count going to be of students that have, you know, killed themselves?
Mm.
What is the number of students that have harmed themselves? What is the number of students who have to drop out because they can't take it? Because and how many students could you have saved Right. With fall reading break.
Right. I mean, if your mandate is to educate the future, you're doing a shitty job.
Yes, UBC is doing a shitty job. And we're going to end on that note. So thank you for listening, everybody. If you want to hear more, check out the Spencer Latty Show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Just check out the Spencer Latty Show. We've got a fascinating backlog of covering Indigenous issues. And now we're going to be doing a much better job of covering UBC issues. Because if it turns out, if you look at it for more than 5 seconds, the UBC and everything UBC related is just as corrupt as the regular world. So we spent the first, you know, fall term without a reading break. I don't know how we lived, bashing big government, but now we'll be bashing UBC.
Right.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because, of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love.